started this morning, I'm going to do a little introductory element before we get into the lesson proper, because as we're looking at a building in Tacoma, maybe it's good for us, maybe it's not. Wanted to give you some detail, and really one of the features that we've done is we've put together a website, and really that helps the Christians in their Bible study, helps others. I wanted to start by saying thank you to Jerry Honeysett. I felt like, and he really was, holding my hand walking me through this, because he's familiar with commercial real estate, and it has a different element to it than residential does. And he went in there total confident. The realtor would say, or the sellers would say this or that. He said, oh, we can't live with that. They want so much. Now we're giving them $50,000 less. And so who knows if the group will say, that's the building. It's certainly not our building. It is their building. But we're there to take a look at it. It's an exciting time. I've never done this before. I've never gone and said, hey, let's check out a building. And I've preached in lots of different ones. But the group has never gone there. And what we're going to be doing is next Sunday, and the times are odd, but it is what it is. That's the times they had available. They've rented it out to different groups. And so the time we have on Sunday, they got somebody there in the morning, so we get there in the afternoon. And we'll have Bible classes. Following that, we'll have worship. And rather than say, okay, now we'll do that, and everybody go home for an hour and then come back and have worship again, and just make it kind of turmoil. That's going to be our worship on that Sunday and the following Sunday, all things being equal. What we're looking to do is, does the group say that makes sense? If 50% say yes and 50% say no, we don't want to do that. We want to be a united body. And one of the things we've done is in helping both in Christian's Bible study and things along that line is, if I can get this. All right, Travis, how come I want it to go Shazam and come to light and it's not doing that? And so, why don't you take care of that? One of the things we did is in looking at both in preaching, we've got, like here, I appreciate guys that are gifted electronically. Richard Baber uploads the lessons. I look at things and say, yeah, it's good. Maybe it works, maybe not.
We're on the maybe not right now.
And, make sure it isn't, I'll just share a little in-house fun. I could say Travis and I have. Travis has. I set my stuff up, and there's always a little bit of uneasiness when I do that something might go wrong. And what he does to have fun, he kind of waves his fingers over my keys like, I'll touch them. You watch, I touch them. So, and he didn't. And it still acts up, which is okay. In uploading Bible classes and sermons for the group, what we're able to do then is, as soon as it's done or as soon as it's uploaded, you have the audio and the visual that's going to be available for you. What we've had to do traditionally is you put in a request, takes time to cut the disc, send it on, and along that line. And so, thank you, Travis. No, that's fine.
You're going to be able to live with that at the bottom?
I can live with anything.
Okay.
And I don't know what I'll do to the slides, but what I set this up to show is that for the next two Sundays, May 31st and June 7th, we'll worship in Tacoma at 1:30. The group called themselves the Fellowship Christian, and I just make the point, it's at 860 East 38th. Did everybody hear me? Raise your hand. Did you hear me say East? Raise your hand if you saw me. You know, sometimes people say, would you turn? I'm not going to ask you. People say, turn to your neighbor and say, he said East. because the tendency is when you get in that area, we tend to go west. They said, there's no building there. Not if you go west. So that's not a big deal. Just turn around, go east, and you'll be fine. In this website, Richard got running. I just say, Richard, I don't know how to do this. And he goes, Shazam, and good things happen. And as you do this, there's the various tabs that anybody can use. It'll be about us or beliefs, online sermons, great resources, Bible maps such as this. As you get over here to members, you can click that. Some people, just a handful of people, saw Rocky's post that it came online yesterday and noted it in Facebook. And what you'll do is it'll say log in, which means you've already got an account, or register. And so you just click register, we get an email, and we say, yes, you are who you said you are, you're the right person, and we'll give you a temporary password, a permanent. I make passwords up, and a lot of times people say, hey, that's a cool password, I'll keep it. But you can change it, you do anything you want, you can change your username, those different elements. You can change your own picture, you can change your address and phone number. And I'll guarantee you there'll be glitches here and there. Because even yesterday, as I'm trying to see if all parts of the program work, that people could send me email, but when I checked it, at least as of yesterday, if you say, visitor says, I want to ask a question, and clicks on that area, it doesn't get to the right spot yet, and so I emailed the program's designer back in Bowling Green or wherever he is, to say, hey, would you please figure that out? So there'll be little glitches that'll happen, but generally you'll be fine. Two hands, and then we'll go into the lesson. Mickey?
Yes, Brother Paul, excuse me, before the service, your son, would you find out if there's anyone that needs a ride?
Wonderful. In fact, let's do that. If anybody needs a ride, Mickey, hold up your hand so they can find you there. Talk to him. We'd love to have you come. We'd do anything we could to make it easy and comfortable for you to do that. Thank you so much. And Thomas.
Just to point out, if you're going up Portland Avenue off the freeway, you would be going west up East 38. You make a right-hand turn. It's going up. So it does go west up to the church. If you're coming from the other side.
If you're coming from the other side, you're still ending up on the east side of the world. That's all I care about, that you're on the east side. And, okay, well, I'll leave that just if you want to make a note to get to it, it's easy. One word, westcampuschurchofchrist.org. It's not .com. We're not commercial. It's not .edu. We're not a university. And it's not GOV. We're not a governmental institution. So it's easy to find us. And
it's not cap sensitive.
Good point. I did that just so people could read what I had there, but you could just write it in all lower caps. You'll be fine. All right, let me leave that and get on to important things. I want us to talk about the sermon I'd like to entitle it is Fear Not. Fear is, there's a word that I heard for a long time. I never even knew what it was until this last year. Ubiquitous. And I thought, wow, that's cool. What is it? I don't know what that is. It's just all over the place, right? And an antonym of that is courage, security, and calm. It made me feel more peaceful just saying those words. I kind of relaxed. I said, Paul, aren't you relaxed all the time? No. I like thinking about being relaxed, but I kind of stay keyed and wound tight. And that aspect of putting it all in God's hands. You say, Paul, how did you feel about all this real estate stuff? Jerry would call me after we'd have a meeting. Paul, do you feel better about it? Right? Because, man, I don't know how they're thinking and doing. And to Jerry, he was just calm. And so when we think about fear, it's been defined as a distressing emotion aroused by impending danger, evil, or pain, whether the threat is real or imagined. It has the same stressful reaction on us. It may not actually be a danger out there, but we're visualizing it that way. And there's degrees of fear that we experience. For some, it might be described like fear God and keep His commandments, just a state of awe or uneasiness or anxiousness. I get up, start dealing with my electronic gear. I've got a little uneasiness. I'm not quite sure what's going to happen if I do this or that. Even thinking about going to a new building, just to look at it, just to worship there, there's some apprehension and that Richard and I have talked about, and Rocky and I have talked about, that as we've got to get in there ahead of time, not only we have a little uneasiness, does our own equipment work in our own building? Will our equipment work in their building? And so you don't know that and how will it sound. And so there's just a little bit of that. Doesn't keep me up at night, but I think about it. Travis brought up a good point to me just yesterday. He said, what about the Lord's Supper? What about songbooks? I thought, hadn't even thought about that. I thought about the preaching. Imagine that. And so we'll have to get that organized. And he said, I've got a truck. Glad to help. And so you guys can work together in some of that. But for others, it goes beyond that. It goes to foreboding. Oh, boy, I don't have a good feeling about that. To aversion, dismay, dread, fright, phobia, panic, terror, horror. So you get the whole range of emotions there. But when you come back to courage, security, and calm, it kind of relax a little bit. That's really what God wants us to do, is to relax in His love. The word fear or afraid is mentioned over 500 times in the Bible. It's a big deal. It's a big deal in our life. We might feel like, well, I have real stuff going on and it's scary. Well, fair enough. But think about our dreams. That the issue doesn't have to be real. And you still, everybody's had those kind of dreams once in a while. Oh, you wake up and say, oh man, I'm so glad I'm awake. I do not want to go back to sleep to do that. It's not really real in the dream, but it has the same emotion. We're going to talk about some of the things in how to deal with that. Think about a phrase that I first heard from Jim Hester, that fear is false evidence appearing real. And so I like this graphic as though it's a window with condensation and somebody took their little finger and said, fear itself. Well, that got me to thinking about a quote from Franklin Delano Roosevelt. He said, first of all, let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself, the nameless, unreasoning, unjustified terror which paralyzes the needed effort to convert retreat into advance. Usually we just hear that first part. There's nothing to fear but fear itself. But this is his inaugural speech as president in 1933. What had they just faced? Oh man, they just slammed through the Great Depression. Here's Black Friday and all the unemployment and things. And what he's saying is, those are big deals. But what we need to do is get our attitude right, because we can't get on the right track if we don't have the right attitude. I was listening to a presentation by Anthony Robbins, the motivational speaker. And he said, think about there being four boxes and how they relate to each other. The first box is potential. In your life, my life, or whose ever. How much potential is there? For most people, you say, well, it's enormous. Then you say, how much potential do you believe you have? Well, that's unlimited. Well, I've a little bit here. Then whatever that belief is about our potential, the next box over is our action. That our belief about our own potential really will determine the action we take. And if we think, well, I'll give it a whirl. That you can tell already they're talking themselves out of it. And with that half-hearted, I don't think it's going to work out very good attitude toward the action, what kind of result are they going to have? The same kind of half-hearted, disappointing results. And when they get that, what that's going to do then in the fourth box is reinforce that belief. See there, I tried and it didn't work out, so I don't have that much potential. And so much of that, it really exists between our ears. Fear is natural and virtually universal. Animals, humans. Deuteronomy chapter 1 and down in verse 17. As they are setting out judges to govern God's people, and he said, "You shall not fear man, for the judgment is the Lord's." That's one of the things I used to think about as a brand new elder. What if you make a decision and everybody rises up, "Oh, that's terrible. Linsomeware, get a rope." Right. And people don't do that. It is very much on my mind always protecting the Lord's people, taking care of them, making decisions that will work in their best interest, as well as just looking at a piece of property. We had to iron out a lot of the contingencies because we didn't want to cost the Lord's people nor use the Lord's money in a way. Oh, man, wish we had just known that or hadn't thought this other way and lost it. People say, "Oh, boy, there goes that." So, and I wouldn't have known to do this, but Jerry said, "Well, we'll give them a promissory note. That is, we'll give you a piece of paper saying we'll give you money provided we get to that." I said, "I like that. I like that better than even giving them a check, which feels like real money." Now, it's as binding if you get to that point off there. But in general, they're just wise things. And God says, "Look, I don't want you to fear what other people think when you use my word to make my judgment." There's fear in battle, Deuteronomy 1, 21 and 29. "Go up and take possession, and do not fear or be dismayed. The Lord is with you." He tells them the same thing he tells us. We say, "Yeah, I know the Lord's with me, bud." And we wrestle these. Generally, they're not nameless fears. We can name them. They're all these things scattered around in our life. God said, "I was with them, and I am with you." In Exodus, in chapter 2, and down in verse 14, Moses was afraid, and he says, "Surely the matter has become known." So he defends one Israelite, kills an Egyptian, and realizes, "Uh-oh, man, I'm in trouble." There's fear of disease. Job said, 9:28, "I'm afraid of all my pains." There's fear of danger. Matthew 8, and down verse 26, Jesus said, "Why are you afraid, you men of little faith?" Well, scary out there in a boat. There's water and there's all these things. There's fear of the future. You know, "Why are you anxious, saying, with what shall we eat and what shall we wear?" Wow. The future scares us. Matthew 6 and down verse 34. If he takes care of the flowers, the beautiful spring wildflowers out there. Jesus' argument, if he takes care of them, won't he take care of you? We go, "Yeah, but..." Now that's the point. So as we look at it, we are called to be God's children. Children of faith. We're called from fear to faith. As we appreciate, men in every age face this. God told Jacob, "Do not be afraid to go to Egypt, for I will be with you." Genesis 46, 2 and following. He told the Israelites, do not be afraid, for the Lord is with you. He told Joshua, be strong and courageous, Joshua 1, 9. He told Hezekiah, when Hezekiah is facing the Assyrian army, he said, you tell them, Isaiah, tell Hezekiah, do not be afraid. I will be with you. Joseph, do not be afraid to take Mary. Apostle Paul, do not be afraid. I am with you. That just shows it doesn't matter how great the person was. It's that everybody faces fear in different areas of their life. And then Paul to Timothy in 2 Timothy 1:7, that God has not given us a spirit of timidity, but of love, power, and sound mind. So that's how God wants to see us and for us to see ourselves. So if you say, yeah, but I got a lot of the quaking and shaking going on the inside, we're going to share some thoughts that's going to help us maybe look at ourselves a little more candidly and hopefully a little bit better. We're going to move over now and look at an aspect of the life of Elijah. Elijah had problems. We got problems. Moses had problems. Joshua had problems. Possible. Everybody has problems. But I'm going to cover some of these somewhat rapidly. In 1 Kings 17, verse 1, my comment, and it's that Elijah just burst onto the scene. You go there, and God says, Elijah, you tell them there's going to be no rain for 3 years. Now, we're struggling in this country, not other countries of the world, with drought problems. Here in Washington State, in California, Texas, other places. Well, what if somebody said, I want to tell you what, God telling you are getting no rain at all for the next 3 years. Wow. And that's his opening sermon. There's not any reference before that. Well, he was, you know, starting his early ministry and this and that happened. Just wham, he comes out and said, boy, Israel, you are in trouble. In 1 Kings 18 and verse 1, we come across him again. It said, in the third year, God says, go show yourself to Ahab. That is, you said it's going to be bad times, really, for their rebellious idolatry. So you tell them, this is how bad it's going to get. Now, after they've suffered that 3 years, go say, hey, Ahab, here I am. And as he does that, the writer of 1 Kings 18:2 says the famine was severe in Samaria, and Elijah went to Ahab. So how would you like to see your greatest opponent? And he does. And prior to that, 1 Kings 18:2 also mentions that Jezebel had killed the prophets of the Lord. So this isn't just minor hostility. This is vehement, deadly confrontation. 1 Kings 18:18, as they meet and begin talking, Elijah says, is that you? I'll just say, you troublemaker. You troubler of Israel. And Elijah stands tall and he said, it's not me. It's you and your father's house. Why we're in the problem we got is not because I'm preaching. It's because how you're living and how you're ruling. Jezebel was not even a Jew. She was a Sidonian Phoenician princess that brought her own idolatrous ways and was incorporated into Israel. And Ahab said, yeah, I guess that's fine with me. In 1 Kings 19, verse 18, Elijah tells Ahab, all right, we're going to settle this. You get your 450 prophets of Baal and you bring them up to this mountain, Mount Carmel, on the northwest corner of Palestine. And as well as 400 prophets of the Asherah, the female supposedly counterpart deity to Baal. And we're going to have a contest, and most of you are familiar with that. And as it goes on, their idolatrous priests are jumping up and down and yelling and cutting themselves. And Elijah mocks them and then finally sets this sacrifice out, and then just God strikes fire upon it. And in that position of power, 1 Kings 18 and verse 40, Elijah orders the execution of 450 of these prophets of Baal. And there's a little creek, river, down at the bottom of the hill, and they took him down there and killed him. Well, when you've done that, you have just made the biggest retaliatory slap you could think of to the queen, your arch enemy, because the Bible says they eat at her table. That is, she provides these guys food, and you've just wiped them out. Guess what? Now you have attracted her vicious retaliation. And so in 1 Kings 19 and verse 2, she said, "May God do to me and more. May I be slaughtered. May I have a worse circumstance than you gave the prophets. Elijah, if by this time tomorrow you're not as dead and bloody as you made them." Well, what did Elijah expect? Well, I'm a preacher. I'll preach. Israel will respond. Everybody will be happy. I'll say, come on down and be baptized. And that's not what happened. They executed the false prophets, and the fat was in the fire. Now you're a marked man. You have the full force of the military at their disposal to hunt you down. Well, it didn't go exactly as one would have hoped. But then what does Elijah do about that? In 1 Kings 19 and down verse 3, we find he said he was afraid and he arose and ran. Well, it sounds like a good deal, right? Mafia's after you. Change your name. Grow your hair long. Get out of town. I wouldn't know where to go where the mafia isn't. I grew up in Cleveland. Cleveland's been in the news lately. It was not an easy town when I was there. It's not an easy town now. But if I was running from the mafia, I certainly wouldn't go to Cleveland. We had some young man who was in our parking lot last week, and I forget which it was. Maybe it was Wednesday night or something. And he had commented that he wanted to come in and charge up his phone. I said, we're just leaving. Lock it up. And he had noted that he was new to the area, or fairly new, and he's come from Nebraska. Well, I had spoken with somebody this past week about Nebraska, just kind of jokingly. And I said, well, what do you think about Nebraska? Because is anybody here from Nebraska? I want to know before I insult you. Okay. And so I said, Nebraska? Who wants to go to Nebraska? The cows in Nebraska don't even want to be in Nebraska. And what this young man said, it's a dangerous place. I said, wow. He lived in some part of the town, Lincoln or wherever it is, on dangerous streets. And he wandered off and didn't want to talk anymore. I said, isn't that interesting? Well, one of the things that we note about it, Elijah, is he had a problem, but there is no biblical reference that he ever sought God. God, what do you want me to do about this? It's just, whew, it's hot and dodge, and we're getting out. In 1 Kings 19 and verse 4, the text says for us, and he went a day's journey into the wilderness, and he came and sat down under a juniper tree, and he requested for himself that he might die. And he said, it's enough now. Oh, Lord, take away my life, for I am not better than my fathers. And he lay down and slept under the juniper tree. Well, you're looking at a brook here. And he had drunk there and had gone over and found a little tree and got a little bit of shade. 1 Kings 19:5 said, and he lay down and slept under that juniper tree. And behold, an angel touched him and said unto him, arise and eat. And when that happened, he went in, actually ate twice, and he went in the strength of that food for 40 days and 40 nights to Horeb, the mountain of God. In other words, if you're getting out of town, it may not be easy. I don't know if some of you have a shadier past than I did in my teens. You might know where to go to hide out. I wouldn't know where to go. And I've oftentimes thought about that. I wouldn't know. Every place that I know has danger and television cameras. But he's just getting out into the desert. And he's gone a month and he's by himself. And then he goes and he finds a cave. There's actually a cave. Maybe there's several. But there's one they call Elijah's Cave. And it's just some cave in the rocks. And they said, look here, there's a tree up above it. Well, yeah, I understand. 3,000 years later, same tree is out in the same rock. And you just happen to know that's the cave. Well, maybe not. But anyhow, there's some cave that he gets into. And he's hiding out. And the passage that means a lot to me is 1 Kings 19:9. God gets to him and it says, Elijah, what are you doing here? You're a prophet. You've got a job. And what are you doing? I'm hiding out. I mean, the troops are after me. And would you do something for me? Travis, in my backpack there, I've got a cord and... before I do too much with my computer, it says your battery is low, and then it goes away. And so as I think about things, I thought, well, if you're going to hide out in a cave. But then what are you going to do for food? What are you going to do all these other kinds of things? And so God has to come to him and confront him. What happens in periods of fear and depression and all these kind of things? Sometimes we withdraw and hide out. Does God have to say to us, what are you doing here? And so, thank you, Travis. And so as we think about those things, we can visualize ourselves in that. You're a prophet. You got a job back there in Israel. You're down in the Sinai Peninsula, 1 Kings 19:10. Really what it real deals with is self-pity. Yeah, but look at my problems. He said, I have been... faithful is what he's saying. I've been zealous for the Lord of hosts. But look what Israel's done. They've torn down your pillars and torn down your altars. And they seek my life. I mean, they weren't converted at all. One guy said that God expects us to be faithful and obedient. But we're supposed to leave the results with him. Isn't that all right? Yeah, but I preached all these years, and all right. Were you sowing the seed? Your job is to sow the seed. God is the one that gives the harvest. And so he's, you know, bemoaning his tough life, and it is tough. But that's life. And rather than focusing on, here is the problems I got. What about the mission I've got? Am I looking all the time of all the negative things that I wrestle with or the opportunities that I have the opportunity to deal with? One writer said we all have feet of clay. You know, that's that statue that is in the book of Daniel, you know, head of gold, and chest and abdomen of chest of silver, belly and thighs of brass and legs of iron and feet of iron and clay. That's what feet of clay is. Really strong, beautiful, tough image. I take it right to the bottom, and there's a few little problems down there. And that's what that idea is, the feet of clay. There's nobody that doesn't have problems, and nobody that doesn't get upside down sometimes. Interesting study was done by two psychiatrists, Minerith and Meyer, very well-known individuals. And they talked about that element of getting depressed. People have problems, they get depressed, and how does that go for them? They said, well, really, the people that will come into our office, this one writer said, I have a guy that comes in, millionaire guy comes in, says, beautiful house, I've got cars, I've got a yacht, nice kids, beautiful women, and suicidal tendencies. Yeah, wait a minute. Well, you got all the toys, all the stuff. And these psychiatrists say the question of happiness is between our ears. It's not of the stuff that's out there. It's all how we're looking at that. And statistically, the more prosperous the people are, the less happy. That seems crazy to us. It should be just the reverse. But the people that have the least have the greatest appreciation for what they have. And so here is Elijah. His focus is all wrong. He's taken his eyes off the mission and he's looking down here at his feet. As a young man, I had the opportunity and the honor of working in structural steel called iron workers. And thankfully, it was for a short time. They're 200 feet in the air, and if you got to walk wide iron, it was a foot wide. Now, if you decked, you could plank it, and so you had a flat floor to walk on, but other iron would go on down in increments, and the smallest is about 2.5 inches, and you're walking at 200 feet in the air. And I tell you what, you are not walking it looking down. You cannot do that. When you walk that iron, you've got to look at the end of the iron or where you're going, and you can walk it. The feet will get there if you keep your eyes on the goal. Isn't that the same thing that the Hebrew writer talks about? Fixing our eyes on Jesus. That's our goal. There's where we want to be rather than, whoa, look at the problems around my ankle. And so people get depressed, negative self-talk, escapism into, it can be anything, into recreation, into drugs, into alcohol, into overeating, into gambling. Something is going to take my attention away from this painful area over here. Why? They lose hope, they're moody, withdraw. So that's kind of the cycle. Well, what was the problem? Well, you had certain expectations and they weren't being met. Now you got your focus wrong. And say, what am I going to do? Well, everybody has stuff to wrestle with. And one of the things is getting out of there is facing the fear. I don't want to look at it. Face the fear. Little story for you. Maybe I told it once a long, long time ago. I was a little guy. And in Cleveland, in the olden days, not all lights had switches on the wall. There's a light bulb hanging down. There's no shade on it, and there's a pull chain. And so, that was our house, and so my bedroom. And I come in, of course, I don't know how old I was, maybe 8, 9, I don't know, youngish guy. And so, you know, just to have fun, I'm going to make a game out of it. I'm going to say, all right, here's what's going to happen. I've got to walk in the door here. And the light's in the middle of the room with the chain or string on it, whatever it was. And then my bed is in the other corner. So I said, what I'm going to do is I'm going to walk in the room. I'll see how fast I can get into bed. And I'm going to turn out the light and pretend there's a monster under the bed. And I'll dive under the covers. But as soon as I get the covers up, I'm safe. Oh, phew, man, got in there real quick. What's the problem with that? Well, I'm developing a monster under the bed that hadn't been under the bed. It was never a monster under the bed. Except I started putting them under the bed. And after several times, it got kind of creepy. And then after a while, it just got scary. The monster under the bed. And I don't think anybody ever told me. It was just obvious. Said, Paul, you put him under there. You got to get him out. And so this time, I said, I'm saying it, the hair is going up on the back of my neck, thinking all the way back. I said, all right, you're going to walk in the room. You're going to turn out the light. You're going to walk slowly over the bed. You're going to lay down. See, the magic security is to get the cover up. And you're not pulling the covers up. You're just going to lay there. And what happened? Nothing. The monster under the bed went away, and I was never bothered by it again. We've got to face our fears. Elijah, you've got some fears. You've got to face those fears. And God, after he asked him, what are you doing here? He said, well, here's all my problems. Well, sure enough. He said, but what I want you to do is I want you to go back. And you're going to anoint Hazael king over Syria. You're going to anoint 1 Kings 19:16, the first half. Anoint Jehu the king over Israel. And in the second half of that verse, you're going to anoint Elisha as prophet in your place. You've got a job to do. You've taken your eyes off the goal, off your mission, and you're looking at the chaos around you. What he's saying is, go back. Get busy. Get to work. Do what you ought to be doing, even though you don't feel like doing it. I came across this little graphic. It said, here's a like a leopard or whatever it is, and snarling, and the guy snarling back. It said three reasons why you should face your fears. And I thought about that. You're braver than you thought. They're not as tough as you believed. And you end up being stronger than you ever imagined. But you've got to face them. Because they're there to some degree of reality or imagination. And once you say, all right, I'm going back. I'm going to face that which I'm afraid of. And Elijah was supposed to do that. You have to confront the negative self-talk. You know, you're telling them they're after me and here's all these problems. I'm the only one faithful. And God said, well, I want to tell you something about being faithful. After all this stuff has happened, I will leave, 1 Kings 19:18, 7,000 in Israel, all the knees that have not bowed to Baal and every mouth that's not kissed him. Elijah, you're telling yourself, I'm the only one. I'm here, Lord, in the wilderness. I'm the last faithful. He said, no, you're not. You're faithful, and we appreciate that. But you're not alone. You are not alone. We tell ourselves stuff that feels right at the time. You know, I've done everything I could. Well, have I exhausted every option in the world? Probably not. Those are just kind of expressions of frustration, which gives us permission to stay paralyzed rather than, wait a minute. I am surrounded by people that love the Lord. And I'm going to keep on keeping on. So I need to reconsider my focus and face those fears. Confront that negative self-talk. And then take the first step. In 1 Kings 19 and verse 19, and he, Elijah, departed from there and found Elisha, the son of Shaphat, while he was plowing, note this, with 12 pairs of oxen. I mean, these guys got a diesel locomotive out ahead of these plow. And he was with the 12th. So he's at the back of the line. And Elijah passed over to him and threw his mantle on him. So here's my cape. Here's my prophetic robe. That is, you're next. It's your job. Carry on. Wow. And as that happened, something interesting occurs. 1 Kings 19, verse 20 says, he, Elisha, left the oxen and ran after Elijah and said, please let me kiss my father and my mother, then I will follow you. And Elijah, he said to him, go back, for what have I to do with you? If you're saying, I'm going to follow you, but I got 20 contingencies first. See, I'm going to hang out, and then I got to sell the oxen, but I got to get the harvest in. He said, look, if you're not committed, I'm not interested. I want you to think about, as we have all kinds of exciting things to think about, things that could be scary, but they can just be ghosts as well. What kind of people do we want to be? When we think about whether staying here, buying a building in Tacoma, or whatever, we need to be a courageous people. If somebody says, well, okay, I'll try it out. We don't want to sign on the line. And what we're going to do is, well, we will go see for a couple of weeks to get the sense of, does it work for us? If it doesn't, we want to really know how you feel about it. If you feel, that's a terrible decision. You're not a bad person for saying that. If you say that's a wonderful decision, you know, you don't instantly get archangel wings just for saying that. The only thing that'll really hurt us is if you say you'll go and then say, yeah, you know, a month later I've changed my mind. Why? Because what the bank wants to know is, are you serious? And I talked with Jerry about how long would people want to make a commitment. He said, well, maybe a year. I said, a year? He said, well, maybe 2 years. I said, 2 years? Huh? 5 years! But I want to know, I mean, there's times you got to, like the Whitney's, job change, got to move, family, this and that. But what we want to know is, are you serious about it? You don't have to be serious about it today. We don't know about it today. We haven't been there. You may get there, and the building design may swallow up our singing, and you want to hear muffled little mice, and it doesn't make sense. Or it may be beautiful. But maybe the utilities are beyond reach, or there's some other facet. One of the things we've talked about is probably not Sunday, but the midweek kind of thing. As you get to the choke point at I-5, as it gets right to Tacoma and Highway 705 and Highway 7, it just gets choked to death there. And so even on the website, I said, here's alternatives you can think about. Supposedly, they're putting in new HOV lanes and bridges and ramps, but that's going to be a year. Let's say three. Yeah, I'm just saying what the newspaper reported, and so yeah, a year, 3 years. It's not going to be done in the fall. Will it be better? Well, hopefully. Can't guarantee that. But you're weighing all those things. And then when we get back together, everybody will have a chance to say. And what we'll want to do is write it down, because we'll need to go to the bank. You're not signing the bank loan. They're not going to come and take your home away if you say, I'm moving to Nebraska to be with the cows. That is just saying, I'm serious about this. Or you can say, look, I'm serious, but we're not going there. And so we want to do what's best for the group. But the reality is we'll face fears here. We got every time birds spit on the building, the classrooms flood. It just is. Is it going to get better in this building? No. Why? Because it hasn't. They've done interdiction and mold and resurfacing and French draining, and it doesn't change. But on the one hand, is we're not in the business of buying buildings. We're in the business of reaching souls and going to heaven, raising the babies, being faithful, and loving one another, and loving the Lord our God with all our heart, all our soul, and all our strength. So Elisha had to consider, he said, okay, and what he did is he went and he sacrificed the oxen and ran after Elijah and ministered to him. He said, I'm on board, 110%. So we'll all face fears, and there's things we need to do is, rather than run from them, hide from them, have poor strategies, is really face them. And then as we do that, think about what is my next step? What should I be doing in order to make that happen? And correct my negative self-talk. And then actually take that first step. Another little statement I got from, I think I got it from Jim. It said, fear knocked at the door. Faith answered. And no one was there. We need to be people of faith. If you would like to respond to the gospel in any way, if you need to be baptized, if you'd like the saints to pray for you, however we could be a help to you, we encourage you to come forward. I want you to think about now, next Sunday, where are we going to be? We're going to be in Tacoma, and we anticipate the Sunday following that. But for right now, we're here, and we'll be here tonight. And if you'd like to respond this morning, we encourage you as we stand and sing.